This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Okay, I've got some numbers for you. There are over 12 million students enrolled in community colleges in the U.S. That's over 45% of all college students. And over the past decade, those numbers have been growing. But are community colleges getting the attention and the money they need to serve those students?
Research One institutions, which are the big research institutions, they've received an increase in per pupil funding of $14,000. At the same time, community college funding has been flat. They've literally gotten a $1 increase per pupil.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk about the state of community colleges in the U.S. and what needs to happen to keep them healthy and growing. We'll also spend an academic minute giving you a one-minute talk about giving a one-minute talk. I'm Bob Barron, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. In 1901, Joliet Junior College was established, mainly due to the influence of William Rainey Harper, then the president of the University of Chicago. It was America's first community college. Since then, over 1,100 community colleges have been built around the country, each unique in its own way, but all sharing one common goal, bringing affordable higher education to their community. But these colleges are also facing a unique set of problems. Here to talk about the state of community colleges in the U.S. is Josh Weiner, the executive director of the Aspen Institute's College Excellence Program. His new book is called What Excellent Community Colleges Do, Preparing All Students for Success. Josh, when President Obama first came into office, he said one of his goals was making community colleges a priority. Has that happened? Have community colleges become a priority in the U.S.?
Well, they certainly are for the American public. The growth of community colleges over the last several decades has been nothing short of astonishing. Over 40% of undergraduate students are now in community college. That's 7 million students. And another 6 million are going for continuing education or to catch up on things that they didn't get in high school or to get new workforce skills. So we've got a total of 13 million students in community college. And they have, over the last decade, grown at four times the rate of four-year colleges. So it's clear that for the American public that is seeking an affordable education, that they are flocking to community colleges. I think from the public side of things, it's not so clear that we have prioritized community colleges. The funding for community colleges has been very difficult. From the decade of 2000 to 2010, Research One institutions, which are the big research institutions like the State University of New York or University of Nebraska, places like that, they've received an increase in per pupil funding of $14,000, $14,000 per pupil from public sources. At the same time, community college funding has been flat. They've literally gotten a $1 increase per pupil in funding. So I think the American public certainly is flocking to community colleges, but we need that attention to be matched by the public. And so President Obama's announcement and focus in the State of the Union and in some of his funding initiatives has been welcomed by community colleges, I think.
Rather than leadership in Washington or at the state level, is leadership right on the college level, on the community college level? Is that important for nothing else being a squeaky wheel?
Well, it's clear that it is. And certainly being a squeaky wheel, making the case for community colleges is important. But let's be clear. Community colleges have not achieved at the high rates that we need them to if we're going to allow for social mobility and to drive the American economy, to make sure that Americans get the skills they need to be successful in a knowledge-based economy. Nationally, data show that if you start in a community college 6 years later, you have a 1 in 3 chance of getting a college degree, whether you stay at that community college or have gone somewhere else. And we've got to increase those rates. Some of that's about funding, but some of that is about organizing the college so that students have the best chance of succeeding. And that's really where leadership comes in. I think your question about leadership is absolutely critical. We run something called, at the Aspen Institute, the Aspen Prize for Community College Excellence. And so we're looking for the best community colleges every 2 years. We administer this prize that's $1 million distributed to the top community colleges. And one thing we see is that great community colleges, meaning those that have high graduation rates, where students are employed at high rates with good wages after they graduate, and students who are learning a lot, those colleges have great leaders, leaders who are willing to take risks, leaders who are willing to, in the unique context that is college education, where decision-making is very distributed among professors and deans and a lot of different departments, they're able to organize the college to achieve much higher levels of student success than a similarly situated institution. So leadership is absolutely a key component to excellent community colleges.
But I suppose something like that, too, is tough to maintain, because a good leader at a community college is probably going to end up being a good leader at a university sooner or later.
Well, that happens some. I think more likely we see community college leaders who are excellent getting opportunities at larger community colleges. There is less movement between sectors of higher education than one might expect. I would think that a great leader at a community college could be a great leader of a four-year college as well, and you see that occasionally happen. But by and large, they're making the move to another larger community college. And this is, I mean, you've raised a really important point. Great leaders realize that to make real change on a college campus takes multiple years. And if what motivates them is achieving high levels of student success, even if a better opportunity personally opens up for them that might give them a higher salary level, more visibility, a larger budget, they won't make that move until their job is done on the existing campuses. At the top colleges we've seen, leaders have been there a decade and more, and really worked hard to change cultures so that professors and deans and support staff, student services staff, are all driving in the same direction. And so the culture transcends them as individuals and really has taken hold throughout the campus.
You talked about the success of a college. How are we measuring the success of community colleges? And are we doing it right? Are we measuring success the right way?
Well, traditionally, community colleges and four-year colleges have been measured largely by two things. Number one is, are they able to fill the seats in their classrooms? If students come, if you can keep your enrollment up, you get the tuition dollars and you can get Pell Grant money and state appropriations for higher education flow from that. And as long as you're filling those seats, you're providing access to an education, you've been seen as a success. The second thing, and this is less true at community colleges than at selective four-year schools, has been attracting a better prepared student. By and large, there's been a drive towards selectivity. If you have a bigger pool of people from whom to select, and you can select better prepared students, that in turn will enable you to get fuller pay students. Better prepared students tend to be from wealthier families, so they can afford to pay more. Better prepared students are more likely to graduate into high-paying jobs, and they're going to donate money back to the campus. And many professors, not all, would rather work with a better prepared student, so you're able to attract what is viewed as a better faculty. I think in this country we're starting to make a shift that traditionally enrollment plus selectivity is what amounted to college excellence. I think we're starting to recognize that getting people in the front door but not providing them a degree that has value when they graduate is not enough. We absolutely need to maintain access to higher education, but access without success is an empty promise. And so when we think about college success, I think we need to take a step back and say, yes, are we making sure that college is affordable and that students can come in the front door, but what is it that a student expects when they arrive? There are four things that students and our society need. First, students expect to learn, and professors are teachers first. So excellent colleges are measuring whether students are learning and consistently trying to improve that. They're making sure that students learn what they came to learn. The second thing is that they complete degrees. As I mentioned, community colleges have less than a 40% graduation rate. Nationally, we have about a 50-55% graduation rate for all kinds of colleges. So great colleges, what students expect from a great college is that they organize themselves so that they can have a good chance of finishing their degrees. Thirdly, that what students learned and what they graduated with, the credential, has value in the labor markets. Higher education has a lot of different goals, including preparing citizens to be good members of a community and of our democracy. But the number one thing that students go to college for is to have a better life when they graduate. And that starts with the chance at a decent job with a decent salary so they can support their families. And so a student has the right to assume that a college is going to teach them and give them a credential that they work for that has some value in the labor market. Finally, we really need colleges to achieve equitable outcomes. Last year, for the first time in our nation's history, there were more non-white babies born than white babies. We know in 18 years where those students are going to be. They're going to be in America's colleges. And if we are going to achieve economic growth and provide opportunity for people, we've got to make sure that those students achieve at a higher rate than they have in the past. Historically, they have not achieved at very high rates, but we know that colleges can do things to substantially improve the outcomes for students of color, for low-income students, and first-generation students, the growing part of the college population. So again, the definition for us is about learning, completion, labor market outcomes, and equitable outcomes that make for a great community college.
Still to come, our conversation with Josh Weiner, author of What Excellent Community Colleges Do, Preparing All Students for Success, continues with a look at just how accessible a community college education is for most students. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for The Best of Our Knowledge, number 1227. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Our guest today is Josh Weiner, Executive Director of the Aspen Institute's College Excellence Program and the author of the new book, What Excellent Community Colleges Do, Preparing All Students for Success. I wanted to know what Josh thought about access to college. With the rising costs of attending college, is accessibility to a community college education at risk?
Well, they are in two different ways. Community college prices are going up. States have been investing less and less in higher education generally. And when they invest less in higher education, community colleges usually are on the front lines of the axe, in essence. Community colleges tend to get a disproportionately high cut in their budgets as compared to other institutions. And so colleges are thinking about dealing with that in a couple of different ways. One is they're trying to become more efficient. They're using technology. They're trying to cut corners wherever they can. But the second way is that they are raising tuition. They have to get their dollars from somewhere, and when the state is not providing public funds, and the funds that have been dropping have been coming from the state, colleges have to find it somewhere, so they're raising tuition. So in one way, access to college is threatened every time tuition goes up, and we have to recognize that there's a public good to having a public education for large numbers of people, and so we need public investment. There's a second thing that's happening, though, which is colleges, community colleges, again, over the last 10 years, have seen enormous growth in the number of students. And when there's been a cut in budget over the last 5-6 years during the Great Recession, when budgets have been cut at the state level, colleges have started not having enough slots for students. I mean, fundamentally, they don't have enough buildings, they don't have enough professors. In California in particular, where 20% of all the community college students in the country are, there are horror stories of students who have worked hard, who are balancing a job with college, who try to sign up for a course that they need to graduate, and they can't get it for a whole year. Those kinds of delays are not just reducing the hope of students who come thinking that they're there to do the hard work needed, who are prepared to do the hard work needed to get a college degree. They also actually lower the chances that student's going to graduate. They may not come back the next year because they can't afford to come back in the subsequent year, or as I mentioned, they may lose hope. So college access is today, particularly for low-income students and particularly for those who traditionally go to community college, it is threatened.
You talked about the selectivity that universities are really instituting now, becoming very selective about the successful students that they take. Does that make community colleges, or is the perception of community colleges that they're just a place for the financially and academically challenged?
It does. I think we have a history in this country of thinking of community colleges as second choices. And indeed, there are more academically underprepared students in community college. But there are also a lot of students, millions of students in community college, who could get into a four-year college, who are prepared to succeed at a four-year college, but simply can't afford it, either because the tuition's too high or because they don't have a four-year college in their community and they can't afford to live away from home in order to attend college. So it's really important that we understand that with, as I mentioned, 13 million students in community colleges, 7 million of them seeking degrees, that we have a wide divergence of students in community college. And that includes students who were failed by their high schools or who dropped out of high school and need a second chance, but it also includes future Rhodes Scholars and members of Congress, and Walt Disney was a community college graduate. So I think we have to understand that with that many students, you're going to have a wide range of students and also a wide range of opportunities, that there really are excellent community colleges that I would recommend that students go to with particular kinds of interests over some four-year colleges. So I think we do have a perception issue with community colleges that we need to overcome.
One thing I noticed, too, with the perception issue, I guess, is that some states are even changing the name from community colleges. I know I live in the state of Florida, and they're no longer called community colleges. They're called state colleges.
That's right. The word community has been removed from all of their names, and indeed, they're all authorized to offer a certain number of bachelor's degrees, calling into question for some the separate purpose of community colleges. So that's right, and you see that in some other places as well. But by and large, community colleges still have the name community in them.
So let's look ahead. Are the goals changing? Do you think that, say, 5 or 10 years from now, that the emphasis on community colleges and the funding will be, you know, are they coming?
Well, I certainly hope so. We can't succeed as a nation in our aims to increase social mobility, to make sure that with hard work, one can fulfill the American dream of having a good life, no matter what the station is that your family had before you came to college. If you're the first in your family to go to college, it just doesn't matter that excellent educational outcomes are available if you're willing to put in the hard work. We just can't get there without supporting our community colleges, but also challenging community colleges to become much better. So I certainly hope that we as a public will both support these vital institutions, but also challenge them to match students' aspirations for success with really first-rate programs across the 1,200 community colleges in the country.
You know, I have one question left here, and it should have been someplace in the middle, but I'll just end with it anyway. How do you think students perceive community colleges? Are they seen as a stepping stone to a further education, or are they just something to train a student for the workplace?
It's really a great question. I think our emphasis on community colleges over the last several years has been on part of their mission, which is to help students get the specific skills they need for specific jobs in manufacturing, in healthcare, in information technology. What we have not paid as much attention to is the fact that 80% of students, when they arrive in community college, have as a goal getting a bachelor's degree. And very few community colleges offer a bachelor's degree. And so students' perceptions, actually, when they enter community college, are that this is the first step in the goal towards getting a bachelor's, which will require that they go on to a four-year college. I think we need to understand that, and it's really important we understand that for a couple of different reasons. Number one, we can't think of students completing that associate's degree in many cases as the ultimate higher education goal. We need to recognize that it's going halfway. It's sort of like finishing 10th grade when one's going on the way to finishing high school. And the second thing is, knowing that, we need to make sure that the funding systems are in place, that the slots in the four-year colleges are in place, and that the four-year colleges themselves are organized to maximize student success. So it's a great question to start with what the students' goals are and to then figure out what the educational pathway looks like that matches their aspirations with something that's not siloed through lots of institutions but has a really clear path for them to what it is that they arrived wanting.
But there are those students who are just going to get, you know, a one-year certificate, okay, now let me go get a job.
That's exactly right. And we know that, for instance, in heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, HVAC, we call it, a one-year certificate can be incredibly valuable. We know that in some kinds of manufacturing, a one-year certificate or a two-year degree can actually lead to a job that pays $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year right out of college. There's a college in South Dakota I visited that is working to help students become diesel mechanics, to work on diesel engines. You know, it used to be that you could open one of those up and with wrenches you could figure out how to work them. They're now driven by multiple computers. And it's really a complicated thing to figure out how to do that work. And those students are graduating into jobs that pay north of $50,000 a year. So I think we need to recognize that community colleges do a lot of different things, that there is great value in the workforce credentials that many of them are providing, and that many other students are also seeking to transfer on a more traditional, what we think of as a more traditional liberal arts higher education path.
Josh Weiner is the executive director of the Aspen Institute's College Excellence Program. His new book is called What Excellent Community Colleges Do, Preparing All Students for Success. Some people you know would rather try to survive a zombie apocalypse than get up and talk to a group of people. That's not only a bizarre analogy, it's also the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. Unless you speak in public regularly, it can be a stress-inducing event. William Dahl, sociologist and visiting fellow at Case Western Reserve University, explains the speech elements that allow even a nervous speaker to connect with the audience.
What follows is a one-minute talk on how to give a one-minute talk, or 2 minutes, or three, or the State of the Union. The fundamentals are the same no matter how long you talk. I give you four rules plus one image. Rule number one, what's your message? You speak to leave your audience smarter from a finding, a warning, an explanation, or even a mood. Rule number two, keep it simple. Use familiar words, clear explanations. Don't use a complex, abstract measure of income like 200% of the poverty level, but a concrete, earthy family of four struggling on $30,000 a year. But note, simplicity is hard. That perfect bon mot rarely pops out instantaneously. Case in point. It took Stephen Sondheim, the famed Broadway composer and lyricist, all the way until the opening night of his Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum to find the show-stopping number, Comedy Tonight. It launched 900-plus performances and captured a Tony for Best Musical. So, have a message, keep it simple, as difficult as that may be. Now, rule number three, repetition is good. Why is repetition good? Because your listeners cannot rehear what you are saying. They depend entirely on your voice to understand. And lastly, rule number four, practice. Sorry, no shortcuts here. Nothing beats practice. And out loud, not in your head. It calms your nerves. It focuses your audience on what you're saying because you are not stumbling to say it. So that's it. Four rules. Message, simplicity, repetition, practice. In that one image I mentioned, it's your listeners' ears. At every step, their ears are all they have to take in your message. Remember that. It will make all the difference.
That was William Dahl of Case Western Reserve University.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.